is this beautiful, it looks like some sort of highly drunk bee tried to do something with this rock face, and they sometimes call it honeycomb weathering. Tafani, and I'm going to put Jeremy on the spot to give us the multiple theories of how this forms.
So leading up to the field trip, I put in some time researching how this forms, and there's several theories that are conflicting, some that help each other, but there's a few types. On coastal areas, marine coastal areas, this process can happen through salt. Ocean mist sprays on the rock face, and then salt precipitates and plucks grains out of it. Another one is capillary chemical weathering. If rain hits this rock and has just the right amount of dissolvents in it, it'll dissolve the cement holding the grains together in this kind of pattern. There's a freeze-thaw theory where capillary freeze-thaw, capillary, the water kind of, sandstones are absorbent, they hold water, so when water gets on the face of it, it'll soak in so far, and if it's the right conditions, it'll freeze and pluck grains out. And there's also wind, wind erosion theory, that just constant being abraded by particles airborne in the wind will cause the same kind of sedimentary feature. For this one, given that we're not close to, historically there has been oceans close, so you can't rule that one out. It is, we do have seasons, so freeze-thaw could be a process. Also the capillary chemical erosion. This sandstone's not really well cemented, so it wouldn't take much to dissolve the cement binding it together. So
I think the common theme, though, that you've probably picked up is the plucking of sand grains. So you've got multiple ways to do this, but the medium, if you will, that you're working with is the sand of with grains in it, grains that are sand-sized. You don't get this in super fine grain sand. You don't get it in super coarse sand. The medium's different, and it behaves and responds, obviously, differently. But we love this because it's I think highly evocative look at the degradation of one of these surfaces.
It's beautiful,
kind of Antonio Gaudi.
It's totally.
Talking about the fossil forest, but this isn't. Any questions as to kind of what we're seeing here? No. Okay. What was the question? That's a good question, and there's some flippant answers and non-flippant. The non-flippant answer, I think, is that the way we think about time, and specifically Jeremy's a geologic mapper, so he uses the rocks that he sees to know where he is in the stratigraphic, actual stratigraphy, or the stratum, the stratigraphic relationships, who's above who. Who is relative to who? Mm-hmm. So when Jeremy's in the field, I interrupted you. You want to keep going?
No. So if I was in the field, I look at this rock face, I would make several notes about it: the lithology type, the sorting of the sands, the the whether they're rounded or angular, and all these different characteristics usually confine what we call formations, lithological changes or time, big time changes. And if you were to keep following this unit out below it, you'd run into a marine limestone that's got a lot of marine animals, brachiopods, bryozoans, crinoids, and so you can really differentiate by the lithological characteristics of each rock unit.
So what ends up happening is that, to come back to the idea of time, we're looking at relative position and knowing elsewhere who's on top of who, to know where we are, relatively speaking, in time. That's one thing. The other is absolute time. How do you know what the age is? How old is this stuff? That's different. You need to have a different kind of a rock, an igneous rock that has a radiometric date that you can get out of that. And from a variety of cross-cutting relationships and other observations, you can determine how old a rock is relative to a known good time marker. So if you have a layer that you say, I know how old this is. I've got radiometric information or paleontologic information to know what this is, that it's 320 million years plus or minus blah, 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 and you know where you are relative to that, that's where we get a sense of time in a given rock. We can say, all right, it's above the 320 million year mark, so it's probably something like this. We have to be vague because we can't put an absolute time marker on it. That's a good question. That was the non-flippant answer.
Because give us the flippant one first.
I can't think of the flippant off. I'm flippant enough.
We have rocks that have been pushed over. There's layers that are.
Yes.
That's structural geology. So.
Okay. That's really exciting. So, in a different field trip.
Okay.
So what I do for the survey is I'm kind of two things: a sedimentologist and a stratigrapher. What I was talking about earlier, those would be the sedimentological aspects of it, say the sorting, grain size, the rock type. The stratigraphy Scott was touching on, we have several tools in our box we can use to figure out time. There's magnetic cycles you can use, there's radiometric dating you can use, there's biostratigraphy, there's chemical chemostratigraphy, so there's several different ways that a geologist would try to determine the age of this rock.
There was a question. The question that came up was, what do you do when you have one rock put on top of another, and how do you figure that out? And that does happen. Glacier National Park would be a great place to see that, where you have the Lewis Overton Thrust. Is that the name of it? I think that's what it is. Where you have a huge portion of the Earth's crust has been thrust up and over and on top, and you have wildly different age rocks, the older on top. And so you have special circumstances to be able to create that.
Is that where all those Precambrian?
Different field trip.
Different field trip. We should probably move on.
Yeah, we should.
You knew that limestone was probably below here, so meaning that it's older.
Yes.
Correct.
So is limestone, I noticed, on the far western side,
that stone is older, but it doesn't necessarily mean it is.
We're in what's called the Illinois Basin. So if you think of the Illinois Basin like mixing bowls all stacked up, boom, 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 boom. You cut the mixing bowls in half, what you see? Arcs, concentric arcs. So you might be standing on mixing bowl number 3 here, that sandstone. You can trace it down into the basin, and it comes up on the other side. Same story, a limestone unit that is older here. It would be older here. You could follow that down through the bottom of the basin and come up on the other side.
Well, both are sedimentary.
Yep.
Correct.
Based from being underwater.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the west side where you're talking about, that's Devonian in age.
Right.
And where we're standing right now, that's about 3,000 feet below our feet. Mm-hmm. So it's still here. It's just way down there.
There's a truism in that.
Thinking of time, I want to keep us on track. 11:20. We'll move on to the next. Jeremy will take the lead and we'll go to the next stop.
I'm anxious.